Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Professional wrestling? Well, you better, because you're getting a lot of it this week. The Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. It is the calm before the storm. 700 hours of professional wrestling next week. Go home shows, WrestleMania night one and two, Stand and Deliver. Apparently there's a New Japan show that's going to be pretty big. You have a Ring of Honor show. You have all the tertiary GCW and other shows that are around WrestleMania. I'm a little jealous because I love the city of Philadelphia so much. It's possibly my favorite drinking city. yeah, Chris, are you hunkered down? Do you have supplies? Are you going to need someone to come in and help you at any point?
I needed someone to come in and help me at any point during this last month, as I was having a full-on existential crisis on all fronts of my life. But in terms of WrestleMania weekend,
we've taken this show in a dark turn, and we're not even 3 minutes in.
No, it's gonna be a good show. I think
I
we're
do too.
We're gonna have a banger show this episode.
Oh, this one? Oh, okay. Yeah. You're talking about WrestleMania. Yeah,
unlike Dustin Rhodes, every single show we do is a banger.
My mustache has its own musk. I almost broke my TV on that one. It's like, oh, Butcher and Dustin? Yeah, here for that. Let's build this. Oh, look, he looks jacked. He looks angry. He's cutting a promo. Oh, your mustache is stinky.
I have a stinky mustache. Sell me on this daddy-o.
Woo.
Boy.
Why is this rating so low? I don't know.
I have no idea.
We'll get into that in a bit. I am looking forward to WrestleMania, though. The match card. Look, not every match has been built up spectacularly, but there's a lot of good matches in this two-night event. It's going to be a long weekend, though, so everybody, buy your snacks on Wednesday, get supplied, get hunkered down, maybe practice if you need to, sitting on your couch all day, you know, and then we'll be at it at Saturday. But the discourse this week, because Chris is not on Elon Musk's X/Twitter, nor is he all that plugged in to criticisms and whatnot. Meanwhile, I am just a dork who is online far too much. Audiences, the big talk of early week shows. How do I put this? AEW was in, I believe, Quebec City. And a lot of people were kind of frustrated that they weren't giving, like, that Shibata and Ospreay match, you know, that they weren't popping hard for, like, the count out at one. and stuff, and they were crowd shaming quite a bit. And then you kind of counterbalance that with the reaction to NXT giving Sean Spears and Dijak a "This is awesome" chant and popping hard for that match, where a lot of people thought it was undeserved. And look, the NXT audience can sometimes think they're the show, but at the end of the day, I can't fault either audience for their reactions, because there are logical reasons for both. And I also am just somebody, as an entertainer who has had to work crowds and had to feel crowds out, and every crowd's a little bit different. I mean, you can have the strongest material in the world and the audience might not respond to it, and you got to change your act. I don't get this whole thing of, well, this is a great match and those people just aren't responding to it, so screw those people. I mean, you can have that. You can have that attitude. I think sometimes, you know, like bands will do it all the time, but you know, it's one of those things. But if they're not responding, it's not necessarily on them either. It's just been a fascinating week, Chris.
Yeah. So AEW, and we've talked about this with the commanders of the roster and that sort of thing, has really built and conditioned their audience to be have an antenna up for what I've dubbed the imported banger, as in a very talented guy from either Mexico or Japan who doesn't talk a lot, who comes out and has the good match to get somebody else over. And they have been conditioned to identify it and have been desensitized to it.
Yes.
And Okada, of course, will rise above that. But a guy like Shibata, unless you're explaining who Shibata is and the mystique of Shibata 10 years ago as like a guy who could like knock you out with one kick, like that his PKs used to be lights out loser sort of level PKs, I don't know why the audience would necessarily recognize Katsuyori Shibata from any other imported banger from Japan.
Yeah, I'm gonna go into that when we get into Lazy River, because I think there were some structural story problems that they could have addressed using Shibata. They only use Shibata when they're in Canada, because I don't think he can get cleared in the States. But it's one of those things to me where, I mean, you don't need the video package necessarily for Shibata. You can, they're telling the story, but they also assume everybody knows the story. It's one of those types of deals. And it's like, well, our AEW fan base is the same fan base that loved New Japan in 2014, 2015,
or
whatever.
That's a long time ago.
It's a long time.
That's a really long time ago to be trying to like reach back to and say we've got equity towards.
Yeah.
Even inside of your own company, it can be hard to call back 10 years ago and make a convincing. No, you know what I mean?
No. I think
if it's 96 and you're calling back to 86, actually, I'll give you an example. WCW tried to do this with Hogan and Roddy Piper.
Yes.
10 years later.
Yes.
I mean, and like you can say there are other problems going on there, but I think one of them is that time moves. 10 years is a very, very long time in just society, and it's even longer in wrestling.
I think Cornette, I forget the number, it was either 4.5 or 7. That's when the audience rotates or over, you know, you get a completely new audience of wrestling fans every certain number of years. And no, history is hard. I mean, nostalgia is especially hard, especially when it's not your nostalgia necessarily. And it's a very risky. We'll talk a little bit more about this.
I mean, I'll give you another example, a little more neutral flavored. Bobby Lashley in 2016 trying to do a callback to the big push of him in 2006, 2007 would have no salience with any of WWE's fans at that point.
Right. And I think there's, I mean, look, he's still a massive specimen of a man, but I mean, that crew that he has with the Street Profits has nothing on that SmackDown show for the most part right now.
Times change, or even more recently, Bryan Danielson 10 years ago versus Bryan Danielson now.
Yeah, and we're let's now put a bookmark in this for Lazy River, because I want to talk about that and Shibata and Ospreay and that entire build for that main event at was it Fantasy? Is that the name of the April pay per view? I forget AEW.
Da, da, da,
I forgot da, the name. I've forgotten da, the name da, of the AEW.
Da, 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 da.
Are you doing Earth, Wind, and Fire for
yes,
me?
Yes, I am. I am doing
you.
A little.
I appreciate
yeah,
it. Thank you. I think we're gonna see them in Chicago together on a double bill, even though they're not, you know, the bands that they used to be, but they're always kind of connected.
I think, and the band is now, I think, a lot of the children of the original Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Is it? Yeah. No,
I think so.
I think they still have Philip Lively, and they still have Maurice. Maybe Maurice was the one who passed. But, you know, they have some, but like all the horns, I think, have been replaced by children and stuff like that. But we'll see. AEW announcing Double or Nothing will be at the MGM Grand Sunday, May 26th. I think I'm going. Kind of disappointing for me because I hate the MGM Grand. It's a terrible arena to watch a thing, and not because of the arena itself, but I don't think you ever been to the MGM Grand, Chris, in terms
yes,
of watching
I have.
A show there?
Not to watch a show.
Okay, never mind. But if you try and go to the auditorium, it's a bottleneck type of experience, and it takes forever to get out of there after a show, and you feel claustrophobic. The only thing if you've ever been to the Superdome in New Orleans, it's a lot like that after coming out, you know, which is just a tiny arena for the most part, especially for a WrestleMania. I just remember I had never felt more claustrophobic then, but the MGM Grand's like a bit of a downgrade from T-Mobile. Look, it's so weird because Double or Nothing over the years used to be, you know, the big event kind of. You know, it's Vegas. It's where everything, not where everything started, but it used to be where everything kind of happened for a while. Now it's kind of with the expansion of AEW and, you know, especially going to Wembley, which they're now going to be loading up on for that show. It's kind of a second tier AEW pay-per-view, which is kind of weird for me.
A little bit. I mean, now that they just have so many pay-per-views.
That too.
I think the other thing is figuring out what's the narrative schedule for this company. Now that you have 10 pay-per-views instead of the 4, where are the climaxes supposed to be in the calendar
year? And that's going to be a challenge. And
yeah.
I think we're going to get into that in the Lazy River as well. But it's one of those things where it's like, now that you're doing this many pay-per-views, it really puts the onus of storytelling and build in a more compact version. You can't just make matches and go, oh, this is a dream match. It's a, you know, and it's two guys who want to be the best, which is just, it, to me, it's the laziest. I don't care who's the best because it's not for the title. And now all these, it's all about who's going to be the best, are never for the world title in AEW. It's always these, you know, it's Bryan Danielson versus Zack Sabre Jr. for who's the best technical wrestler in the world. And while I respect technical wrestling, the Yazoo, are these two?
I mean, it never actually settles for good.
It
who's
never
the
settles.
Best? No, right? Like, it's always like, who's the best technical wrestler in the world between these two guys? And then the next time one of these matches happens to decide who's the best technical wrestler in the world, we do it all over again, and it might be two completely different guys.
Well, we're doing that now for Danielson and Ospreay when Danielson just lost to Eddie Kingston clean. And it's just kind of like, we actually are going to avoid our own marketing. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, dream match. It'll be good. Everybody loves. I mean, I grew up in the ECW era of it ain't ballet. It's kind of ballet to me at times. It's not about who's going to beat somebody up or something. It's, are we going to have a good, clean, technical match? And you're just like, I hate Ring of Honor so much because of what it's brought to wrestling in terms of the national stage, in terms of all this. Yes, code of honor, sportsmanship. The Kevin Nash vanilla midget comment lives rent free in my head in so many ways. You know, and don't get me wrong, I loved the so called vanilla midgets back in the day. I loved Benoit and Malenko, but they looked like they were killing dudes every time they went out there.
Right. I mean, the reason Benoit and Malenko worked, I was actually just explaining Benoit to somebody the other day, like why people latched on to him the way they did, given all of his minuses. You know,
he couldn't talk,
didn't have the look. There's just a lot of things working against him. Is that he came out there and he looked like an absolute killer. He had that Ken Shamrock murderous kind of factor.
He chopped the crap out of you, and everybody would just stand up and go, okay, it's on. We're here now for it. Also of note, Collision moving to 11:30 Eastern on Saturday to try and avoid the glut of wrestling that will be on Saturday night in terms of WrestleMania.
Well, it's ironic that their name is Collision and they're running away.
They also have basketball that night. I mean, it's just a murderer's row of television.
You're saying that AEW doesn't have confidence in maintaining their ratings based on the strength of their product?
I'm saying their B show is going to get killed on that
their
night. That's
beloved
what I'm telling.
B show.
Yes. Speaking of which, watched Collision before this, trying to, if there's a update on Ricky Starks' condition, I'll give it here, but it looks like he got injured. Also bearing on this edition of AEW Collision and a surprise opponent for Adam Copeland, Matt Cardona for the AEW TNT title. Why don't we plug these things, Chris? Why is surprise such a thing in a company that's number two? That's what I don't get here. I mean, number one can get away with it because you're going to have a lot of eyeballs. Number two needs the eyeballs. And then they just say, well, watch and we'll see who his opponent is. And I just assumed it was going to be Ethan Page, so I didn't care. But
Zack Ryder is another good example of someone you call back to from 10 years ago and it doesn't have anywhere near the same salience.
Yes, but there's all that history between him and Edge.
Oh, yeah, they're both edgeheads.
The edgeheads, yes.
People love the edgeheads.
Yeah. Jade Cargill debuted on SmackDown last night. Kind of in the slot I thought she was going to be. I actually thought it was going to be her and Bianca versus the Kabuki Warriors for a tag title. But it looks like they're going to put them in a six-woman match. She cut a promo basically saying that all the women in the locker room aren't her. It's a bit of a shaky promo, I thought, but she looks like $1 million. She looks like she's going to be part of that SmackDown roster. Boy, is she not. She's not positioned to me to be a babyface. That promo and that look and everything. She needs to turn on this crew right after the six-woman match, in my opinion.
I agree. I think she's just a natural heel.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work with her as a face. Having her as a face against Rhea Ripley. Rhea Ripley inevitably is going to be turned babyface by this crowd. Yes. And Jade Cargill is a perfect heel for Rhea to go up against.
That would be a good build for next year's Mania. But it's weird because to me, I don't want Jade and I don't want Tiffany Stratton on the same show. Because I think Tiffany Stratton should be one of the main eventers on one of the nights next year as well. I think for
this year, while you're cruising up to Rumble, you could theoretically put Stratton and Cargill together as a tag team and have them be a very dominant tag team.
Well, not right now because Jade's teaming with Naomi and Bianca as of last night. After Mania.
Right, after Mania.
Yeah, you're saying on the road to Mania.
The road to Mania next year.
Okay, next year, yeah. Okay,
yeah, there yeah, we go. We're looking ahead, right?
I was like, we have 6 days, Chris. We don't want
to put it. No, it's time to turn Jade heel, pair her with Tiffany Stratton, and put the belt on her on Monday.
On Monday, yes.
On Monday.
We're just going to car crash booking.
That's not.
Vince Russo would be proud of that booking.
It's called a surprise. People like it.
There we go.
And it gets big ratings.
There we go. Yeah. And the only other talent issue this week, I think Jake Roberts re-signed for a year with AEW. That was nowhere to be found on Collision. I just laughed at that hilariously. I'm like,
I can't wait to see what Jake and Lance Archer get into now.
Well, Lance was on Collision in the main event with the Righteous against Claudio, Bryan Danielson, and Shibata. Which we'll get into, but yeah.
This is the other problem. Our Blackpool Combat Club reliably heals. So then the crowd really doesn't know what the hell to do with them.
They're going to cheer them either way. So they just decide to swing them whatever they need them to. And I don't think they care about the Shades of Grey booking, blah, blah, blah. It's like, guys, this business is built on conditioning.
Surprised, though, when you show the audience, in like the animal in this case, gray, and the animal doesn't know if it's black or white. You know what I mean? Like the audience is a binary animal. They think boo or cheer.
Yes.
Occasionally you can get the split crowd. Let's go, Amos. Both these guys.
Cheering for a great sequence. Hooray. Wrestling's fun. It's like, no.
But that really should happen once every quarter for one match, not like nearly as often as it does now. And I think that we've been trying to. I guess the question I would ask is, what would the spectrumatic reaction to gray presentation be for an audience? Some like gradation between booing and cheering, where like it's like boo, yeah, and like they land somewhere in the middle of that based on the gray that you're showing them.
We're going to wait until we see how the match is being worked to determine whether or not we're going to cheer or boo the act that's in there. If they are working as baby faces, we will cheer vociferously. If they are working as heels, we will ironically cheer.
This is thumbs up, thumbs down. Like thumbs in the middle doesn't do anything. All of this, you know, even like the old gladiator fights, we're just waiting until it settles into up or settles into down ultimately. See, and in my case, I got a thumbs up there.
It's a battle of book tours on the media circuit right now. This one's going to take a bit, but I want to read it all because it really is a fascinating tale of two cities type of thing, or two points of views. But at the same time, both people are both a little bit right and a little bit incorrect. And I am talking about Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch. So here we go. This is from the Wrestling Observer, which was nice enough to type all this out, but I watched most of this stuff. Regarding long-term booking, Ronda Rousey said, quote, "The Bloodline is able to plan things out a year ahead of time, and they won't even talk to me until I get to the arena about anything. I proved in my first match that if you give me the time, the resources, and preparation, I can put together an amazing match, and I feel they're really doing that with Logan Paul and allowing him to rehearse and put these things together and have all these different resources, producers, to bring him to his highest potential. And it got to the point where the girls weren't getting any of that." She also said, "I just didn't want to be Vince's action effing figure anymore. I felt like I was doing custom matches for effing sicko in the back. All power to the girls that keep fighting the good fight, but I'm in my mid-30s now. I've got S to do." When asked about her prior comments on Bruce Pritchard and what she wrote in the book, she said, "Vince was never gone while I was there. He was just phoning it in through Bruce Pritchard, my agent who works at WME, which is William Morris Endeavor. He was telling me, you know, he's completely gone now, I swear. And I'm like, I'll believe it when I see it, because everyone said he left before. He never left. He was there by text message." Rousey said she wanted a singles match with Lynch at WrestleMania 38, which had been the plan for months ahead of time when she returned, and then plans changed. WWE just refused to work with me at all. They refused to collaborate. They didn't want to talk to me about it. They kept pushing it off and pushing it off until it finally got to the road to WrestleMania, and they're like, yeah, we're not going to do you and Becky. I'm like, all right, well, then I'm effing leaving unless me and Shayna can tag. You guys don't work with me. You don't want to do something extraordinary. You just want to do enough every single night. I came here to have fun with my friends." She said she told Paul Levesque that when she decided to leave, she told Levesque, quote, "I can't be associated with mediocrity," unquote. And that's what they seemed to be happy with at the time. "I hope that is different now, but I can't say that I've ever experienced it any other way." She praised Levesque, as we noted. She was always positive on both Levesque and Stephanie. "Triple H has been great towards women in the company and really believing in us. He's the whole reason that I was there, because he believed in me. I really wish that my last run was under Triple H and Vince being gone." About WWE, she said, "Everything just being beholden to this near 80-year-old man who has 5 or 6 episodes of Behind the Bastards about him is not a very good business model." Regarding the Flair-Ripley match, I'll let you comment on the Rousey half, and then I'll go to the Lynch half. half. Regarding the Flair-Ripley match at last year's Mania, considered one of WWE's best bouts of the year, she said, quote, they weren't supposed to go that long. The whole time the referee is telling them to go backstage, and Charlotte threw her big dick on the table and said, no, we're going to do this awesome effing match, and that's what women wrestlers are dealing with. They're not allowed to show how effing amazing they are because, oh, the crowd's going to be tired for the guys' match afterwards, and that's BS. I have cleaned up the language other than Charlotte and her big penis. Chris, Rhonda's kind of right here.
Yeah, I think, especially given the fact that this book was written probably well over a year ago now, right? So well before the allegations surfaced to the table, the stuff about custom matches and Vince's relationship with women's wrestlers and yep. whatnot has a different level of gravitas. The timing of this book coming out intersecting with that other thing makes you really, you know, look at that section and go, huh, that's interesting. That being said, Ronda was good in those first few matches, and the quality of performance dropped the F off after
yes.
that.
The
and
second
it never
run was
came
bad.
Back.
It
the
was
second
bad.
Run was actively bad.
And it's interesting you say that because that's a good segue into Becky Lynch's comments, and then we can compare the two. Becky Lynch was asked about Rousey's comments by Ariel Helwani. She said, quote, I have a very different view and a very different experience of WWE. I always wanted to do this. This is what I always wanted to do. I love this. I love this. And is it perfect? No, nothing is. Nothing is. I've worked in little delis that you're like, how does this place operate? The size of WWE and the amount of talent and people that go into making it go live on TV for 5 hours a week when you're just talking about Raw and SmackDown, and then you've got pay-per-views, and then you've got NXT. So there's so many people that go behind that. So you're going to be dealing with a lot of people. So you're going to be having some negative experiences. But this is my dream. I've always wanted it to be good. I've always looked at myself, how can I be better? How can I make the division better? And I've always worked to make it better. Stuff like the creative, it's not always great. There's been a history of it not making sense to me. But somebody's personally going, how do we make, but nobody's personally going, how do we make Becky Lynch look awful? False, but they have so much going on.
Well, maybe not her, but I think there are. Yeah, Ashley Massaro would like to have a word, but she's no longer taking calls.
But they have so much going on. There's so much going on, and the fact that we pull everything off the way that we do, and even at time when notoriously the shows were getting rewritten as we're going to live on TV, and we still get them done, still went out there, we still hit our times, and we still made the show work. And no, it wasn't always great, but a lot of it was all doing the best we can. Nobody wants to go out there and do bad work or make anybody look bad. Lynch felt that due to Rousey's celebrity status, that WWE may have pushed her too quickly. And from a strict wrestling in the ring perspective, of course, that's true. But everyone has to realize that this is business, and that's where we go. This is Dave editorializing this. Here we go. She was coming off of a different industry. She was a star, and she should have been handled differently in terms of, I think she had such a great first outing that everybody thought, oh, she can wrestle. I mean, this was respect, but she couldn't wrestle. What we do isn't something you can just have one good match and then, okay, yeah, I'm off to the races. It's a craft, and you have to learn your craft, and you have to be diligent about learning your craft. But everybody treated Ronda like she already knew it because when she first came in, she was good in that first bout. But she was also working with Kurt Angle. She was working with Triple H, Stephanie McMahon. It was a well-rehearsed match because everybody wanted her to succeed. And then it was, okay, she can do this, off to the races, and that was mishandling her because she was a star in her own right, and she'd done so much for MMA. So in terms of that and booking, that wasn't done well. But my experience coming from nobody thinking that I was going to be worth anything and making myself very valuable to the company and very valuable to wrestling in general, it's because I loved it. Because I loved it and I sought out to do it. She came in and she found a place that she enjoyed, she liked, but she never sought to do it from a young age. And I think that changes the experience when you go into a place. Now, she is right on a lot of this. But she's also buying into that Horatio Alger. If I just work hard enough, and I did all this myself, and I made myself a character. Dude, I put this every time. 3/4 of the way through that Charlotte Flair, Becky Lynch match, commentary is still trying to tell you that Becky Lynch is the heel when she's the babyface. And that wasn't Becky working hard and persevering. That was the audience wanting her to be pushed. And I get that, but there's a little bit too much company woman Becky Lynch in this statement for me. And I get that she loves WWE. But yeah, there. I mean, you can't tell, you kind of nail this. Like, yeah, there are people who want you to look bad occasionally. There are people who make you look bad, and
there are examples time and time again.
There's an example with Becky Lynch,
right?
Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair. That SummerSlam, or was it SummerSlam or Mania, when she came back, knocked out Bianca Belair and pinned her in like 30 seconds, and look, Becky did right by her and sought to do a makeup for it, but at the time, that destroyed Bianca Belair. Absolutely murder deathed her.
I found that entire quote. I want to apologize in advance to my friend Jory, who's probably listening to this. I found that entire Becky Lynch quote extremely tedious. That she sounds like at once that she's just God's gift to wrestling, and Becky's good. Very good, you know, but she's had her ups and downs for sure. And I think it sounds weirdly entitled. It's weird to say in one breath, you know, the industry's not perfect. It's almost like one of these delis that seems to have rats going on in the kitchen. But which is sort of the implication there with this, you know, I've worked in delis where it's like, how are you guys? So the implications that there's like, you know, bad stuff that's underneath the food code going on in the deli. If you extend that out to the wrestling industry, then there are deep underlying problems, many of which came from Vince McMahon. And her being the company man, I think, does her the ultimate disservice, because I think it undermines her credibility whenever she's asked about things going forward, because it's so transparent.
It's the weird showbiz thing. And this happens in all showbiz. It just doesn't happen in wrestling, where you get to a certain level of stardom and you think it was all your hard work that got you there. When there was a lot of luck, a lot of casting directors who thought you had the right look, you being in the right place at the right time. It's not that you didn't work hard. It's not
no,
nobody's
you, you
denying
worked hard,
that.
You work hard to get your good luck. Yes. You're working. It's like a game of craps or something where you're working really hard to put your chips at the best position on the table.
But that seven can always come
right,
at any time.
Right, yeah. You can still get a bad roll, and circumstances beyond your control can still screw over great position, right? And I think it's really interesting as you bring up these two quotes where we have two Redders here in Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch, one of whom, Ronda Rousey, I have a much dimmer opinion of, generally speaking.
Yes.
I don't think much of Ronda, but what she says feels so much more authentic than what Becky Lynch, a person I have a much higher level of respect for in both, like, you know, her accomplishments and just generally speaking. What Becky's saying here is so silly. And
it's Academy Award type stuff where they go up there and they tell you how important acting and our craft is to the world and what we mean to, and you're just kind of like going, all right, it's important
just
to everybody in that
real,
room
man.
Right now. Yeah, just say something real.
Just say something real. It's all I want.
Yeah. Gonna do it for the news. Not going to the lazy river, but I am going to read the ratings. Oh no, never mind. I do have a silly story for you here, Chris. Jesse Ventura announced that they would be launching Jesse Ventura Farms, a cannabis brand. The idea that they are pushing it that he's the first person to serve in major public office to start a cannabis brand. Ventura, while a politician, was always in favor of marijuana laws legal reform. Chris, will you be picking up any Jesse Ventura Farms cannabis?
Yeah, marijuana is an exciting new product that you're hearing more and more these days about. And I think that Jesse Ventura offers something new and different to the market beyond the 850 strains of cannabis that are already there.
It makes you paranoid about
Oh, so it's a sativa.
She should have just called it Gorilla, and I would have been great with it. But yeah, so that'll do it for the news segment. Lazy River, AEW Dynamite, scary rating. It's Dave's words on March 27th. 747,000 viewers with a 0.23 in the demo of 18 to 49, and 0.13 in 18 to 34, far lower than usual. It was the lowest total viewer audience for the show in its regular time slot since April 7th, 2021. Lowest in 18 to 49 since June 24th, 2020. NXT, 601,000, 0.17 in 18 to 49. Raw, which had Punk and an unadvertised appearance by him and The Rock, 1.729 million viewers, 0.57 in the demo. SmackDown did 2.235 against the NCAA tournament, which is pretty damn good, 0.61 in the demo. But the number was the lowest year in both categories, but the number had to be considered good based on the competition. So AEW Dynamite did not do well, and everybody's look, people aren't setting their hair on fire necessarily. People are kind of being tough on people like us who seek to go with that. But I think there's just simple storytelling stuff that AEW isn't doing well. And I want to start the Lazy River with Dynamite.
I'll look at it like this, right? You just dropped a bunch of money on Kazuchika Okada and other talent acquisitions with the hope, Mercedes Moné, with the hope of boosting intrigue in the product and boosting ratings and putting a jolt of energy into this. I'm not laying this ratings number at Okada and Moné at their doors, but I'm sort of laying it at AEW's door that you just spent a lot of capital acquiring things to, you know, put gas in the engine, so to say, and the car's moving slower now, and I blame the organization
a little bit.
And utilization. There are issues going on here. That to me is the story with the AEW rating number. I don't want to overfocus on Moné and Okada. It's just that this company has just gone through a big spending phase on talent, and you would expect with a big spending phase on talent to see some sort of ratings number. And then the debate is that boost in the ratings worth it, a la CM Punk a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, look, the major problem to me is nothing to do with the company at all. It has to do with the amount of wrestling that's on there and the amount of shelf space being taken up because, look, WWE's on a hot streak. They're going to WrestleMania, and it's one of those things where, I mean, this week alone, if you wanted to watch all the wrestling from both major companies, it would be, let's see, 3 hours on Raw, 2 hours on NXT if you choose to do that, 2 hours on Dynamite on Wednesday. That's seven. You get to an hour of Rampage maybe on Friday. Okay, that's eight. 2 hours of Collision on Saturday. That's scheduled. That's 10. You have a 3 hour pay per view by NXT. That's 13. You have 4 hours on both Saturday and Sunday of Raw. That, you know, that's 20 some odd hours. That's a part-time job right there if you just want to keep up for it.
We're back to that again.
Yeah, whereas, you know, when I was a kid, you know, you'd get the 1 hour of one company in syndication. Maybe you watch the 2 hour on TBS of Crockett for me, but then it's like, yeah, you're hungry for more wrestling. But if you had this much wrestling as a child right now, I mean, by the time I get to Thursday or Friday, I just want to watch a movie or a documentary or something as opposed to more wrestling. And it's not that the wrestling's bad. It's just, it's not important. Nothing. SmackDown is a fun show to watch, and it's building those programs, but those programs don't feel as hot as the Raw programs. And because now that The Rock is on Raw as well.
Right.
So it's one of those things where it's like, they're telling me that this is the A show. Dynamite tells me that that's the A show. But if we want to go into even the granular, I will get into this Shibata being the fulcrum between the Ospreay and Danielson match. Okay.
Well, so I want to stop you real quickly here.
Okay, go ahead.
Because I don't want to let this point about talent acquisition just move on quite yet. What is the point of AEW spending money to acquire talent then, if not to get better ratings? I know for the fans, it's we like you the good match.
Yes.
But you've got a lot of people on there who can give a you the good match. So that's there.
You've turned Italian a bit for that.
I have always been Italian.
No, you're a fake Italian.
That's okay. So we will discuss what you just did there. That was an ism, and we will discuss that ism after the show.
Please talk into the mic.
I'm gonna use my microphone. That was an ism, Jeffrey. That's another. That was sarcasm.
Yeah. I apologize to any Italians who might have been offended by me calling Chris a fake Italian. Because he's not. He's pure Italian.
Exactly.
Not
Thank
Sicilian,
you.
But he's Italian.
Well, it doesn't really. It's all part of the same. It doesn't. You know what?
He's not Chico Marx. That's what I'm telling you.
I don't
you.
Like what you're doing right here. But okay. the point is, AEW has lots of people who can deliver high quality work rate matches.
Yes.
So to me, the reason you would spend, because Adam Copeland wasn't cheap either.
No.
So the reason you spend money on any of these guys is, one, that you start building the show around them in a serious way. And two, that you're doing that with sort of this expectation of when we sign Wrestler X, whoever Wrestler X is, that Wrestler X can give us a delivery in the ratings, that this is a person who's an anchor for the show. Otherwise, we have good matches covered by our commanders and our Takeshitas. There's lots of guys on this roster who deliver that high quality match.
Yeah, they have high quality matches. It's just there's no edge to them. There's no let's take the example of the Mercedes Moné segment coming out on commentary, where
always the best way to use her.
Well, she was more of a fan, and she didn't have a take. She needed to be out there having a strong take on each individual in that match.
She's never been good at that, though.
No, and she's not.
She's not good at that. That's never been a strong point.
No,
of hers.
Her promos have always been a little bit overrated, to be honest.
Well, and then when she's on commentary, I feel like that's even a step down from the promo.
Yeah. Like if you watch the commentary segments with when her and Bailey were the golden role models, she wasn't bringing a lot to that other than being the character of Sasha Banks. And this is what AEW is falling into a little bit here in terms of they're doing character work, but that character work, it's not translating to matches or promos or anything. It's just we're giving people character. We have Brian Keith, the bounty hunter. Okay, does he hunt any bounties? No, that's just the character he's playing right now. You know, we have Tony Storm, who's doing the silent film thing, but it's not, you know, it's funny, ha-ha sketch comedy, but how is that, you know, translating to building matches here? Oh, well, people like the character, so they'll like the match type of a thing. It's not building a feud. It kind of gets me to, okay, what is Will Ospreay's nickname right now?
They do one or two things, too, really often. It's they like the character, so they won't care about the match, or they like the match, so they won't care about the character.
Yeah. Eat the mic a little. There we go.
Well, you were telling me to turn it down earlier.
Oh, no. Well, that's when it was blowing out my eardrums.
Well, okay. You know, do you want it to peek out? People don't like it. No one likes clipping, Jeff.
Okay.
Use a compressor.
I have a compressor.
Well, I mean, on the whole show, you know, or have the audience can use a compressor.
Well, we don't need to do
why are people post-producing this show?
Because that was your job originally.
Oh, yeah.
But this goes into my point as well. The Will Ospreay thing. Will Ospreay's a fantastic wrestler. There's no doubt about that. But on American television right now, he is being labeled the aerial assassin.
Ooh.
And what did we do? We put him in a match against Shibata where Shibata did ground game wrestling for 70% of it. And we haven't really established Will Ospreay as a aerial assassin. Now, it doesn't have to be literal every time. Don't get me wrong. But it's kind of the expectation type thing. It's like, I'm not here to watch Will Ospreay have a 70-30 match with Shibata. I'm here to watch him kick ass and build that match against Bryan Danielson. That's what I want.
It's not even just the 70-30 thing, right? It's the nature of the 70-30 being that Shibata repeatedly grounded Ospreay, and Ospreay had to get to the ropes to get out of all of the groundings. Commentary is putting this over. His aerial moves should fluster Shibata early in the match.
Yes.
Shibata
should have an almost win, because the story they're telling is about a match they had 7 years ago where Shibata beat him. Okay, have Shibata almost beat him, and then have Ospreay do all this cool stuff aerially and beat Shibata.
I would have Ospreay get the first 10%, 15% of the match with big aerial moves, and force Shibata to have to regroup.
Yeah, and
realizing
then
you get into the ground game. Shibata regroups, gets into the ground game. He gets control of the match, and then Ospreay takes over and wins.
But I would also just go, okay, how are we going to do this? Okay, we're going to have Shibata face Danielson on a collision. Okay, great. And what story are we telling? We're telling the story of, you know, Shibata really beat down Will Ospreay, and we're going to use him as the go-between between Danielson and Ospreay. Okay, great. Go ahead. Sorry.
If you want to protect Shibata a little bit more, especially since you're planning on using him the next night, and you want to get over Ospreay as the aerial assassin, Ospreay hitting like a devastating looking missile drop kick to the outside that forces Shibata to not be able to answer the 10 count and get counted out. That would have been a great way to get it over. You know, Ospreay gets back in, and Shibata can't get back in the ring. It's a 10 count off of a missile dropkick.
Or my idea was, because the Shibata-Danielson match was last week on Collision. You have Danielson beat Shibata with the move that Shibata beat Ospreay with. Okay, great. So now Ospreay's going to be facing Shibata on Wednesday. Okay, cool. Maybe there's some lingering effects of that Danielson match on Shibata, and Ospreay just runs through the guy or whatever. Or you do a beat the clock because Ospreay wants to show that he's better than Danielson. So I'm going to beat Shibata in less time than it took you to do it or whatever. I mean, I know that's a WWE trope. I get it, but it's wrestling.
They need to get out of that, because they're doing that with Takeshita too, where he's just eating losses left and right.
Well, we'll get to that one in a moment, but it's just like, there's no tail here. They had a fine media package on both Collision and Dynamite. The Dynamite one was of Bryan Danielson. Some say he's the greatest technical wrestler, Ring of Honor, blah, blah, blah. And then they kind of did the same with Ospreay on Saturday. But it's like, okay, they're just going to have a match, and we're not really – there's no animosity here to build on. It's just, oh, it's a dream match. Great. You know, who's the best technical wrestler right now? When even the people who are watching AEW – have seen the Zack Sabre Jr. Danielson match on Forbidden Door, and we knew that Zack Sabre Jr. won that match. It's they're not telling the story. Now the story on Takeshita and Swerve was even more malfeasance, because last week on Dynamite, you might recall, we did two character beats, one for each. We had Takeshita injure his arm during his match on Dynamite, and we had the reveal that Swerve has been learning joint manipulation to get submissions in anticipation of it. He had an arm lock, a key lock, I think, for a finisher on his match last Wednesday. This Wednesday, you would think, okay, in the number one contenders match, we have the injury to Takeshita. We have Swerve with his new finisher. Swerve finishes Takeshita with that. Nope. We're just doing a match. We forget about all the things we built last week to build to this. We have Don Callis on commentary not helping his guy in a number one contender match for the big title in your company, instead doing jokes with Taz and Shivani on there. And Nana's at least acting like a manager at some point.
Callis like seemed to forget that he was a heel for periods of time while on commentary.
Yes. Oh, I'm like, here to... Yeah. Uplift the sport of professional wrestling by saying everybody's good and stuff. And it's frustrating, Chris. It's frustrating to me, because it's like, Yes, it's very good wrestling. And the people who were raised on compilations and, you know, notebooks and spreadsheets of what their favorite match was during the year. And so,
how many people was that, though? I know that's a lot of people who are listening to shows
like
this
one. Yeah.
But how many people even among the wrestling fan base is that? Or are they kids who grew up doing RKOs to each other?
They might have been, and, you know, stunners and things
and
like
rock
that.
Rock bottoms and,
rock
you know,
bottoms.
Super kicks. And,
I mean, that's very possible. That's very
more
possible.
Their relationship with the product.
But at the same time, it's just like, you know, the Monday Night Wars were to kill this in some ways in terms of building to a pay-per-view instead of just putting a bunch of stuff on there and expecting the fan base to pop for it because they're seeing a bunch of stuff on there. And it's you need to take a step back and realize that the weekly television is to build things. And you're wanting to build people and keep them away from each other. And I watch wrestling to watch good wrestling. I have this argument with somebody from Voices every week. And I go, that's fine. We'll have a TV main event. But everything else should be build.
Well, and that, if you want to just do the good wrestling matches too, that's what your B show should be for.
Okay, I'm good with that.
I'm good with that too. The B show should be all about the Commanders of the world and the Takeshas of the
world.
Make
it the old NWA main event, which was originally supposed to be, oh, here are matches from an arena that you don't get to see, main event matches, blah, blah, blah. This is when house show business was down. So they decided to start putting the, and then eventually it just became another weekly television squash match show that sucked.
Right. But yeah, like kind of, you know, like the early days of WCW Saturday Night Night too. Same idea.
The point of a television show, and this is what gets me, is, and this is also just the feud I have with wrestling fans, is your viewership wants to know that they're watching something important at this time.
Well, I think AEW in particular, like WWE is weird because you have Raw and SmackDown. They sort of have two flagship shows, even though Raw always feels like A, and then
yes.
SmackDown feels like 1A, but they do have like two flagship shows. With AEW, the narrative drive has to happen on Dynamite.
Yes.
And I would be much more okay with fewer matches on Dynamite and more narrative and universe cohesion work being the priority. You have a big main event every week, a big sub main event every week, and some stuff happening in the first hour, some matches peppered in, maybe a match to start the second hour. But mostly the point of hour one and everything leading up to the sub main event and the main event, which are going to be well worked, needs to be about universe building.
Yeah. I mean, you can have a storyline throughout the show if you wanted to do that too, that leads to the main event of that show. And okay, this is the part of the card that we're working on and stuff, but you can't do, you know, it'd be like, I always, because everybody goes, well, what about sports? They do, yeah, but sports are natural rivalries. It's actually real. And, you know, for the NFL, people watch an NFL show, a random NFL program, because there aren't that many of them on. There's wrestling on every week. And you're going to have to figure out what people like in wrestling and then put that on there, as opposed to what you like in wrestling and put that on there. If they did an episode of Game of Thrones where it's just guys riding through the countryside and they just come upon a random army and they do a bunch of sword fights and whatever, everybody's just gonna watch it and go, what the hell was that? What did that have to do with anything right now? Well, it was cool because you had a fight on there. It's like, okay, great, but we didn't establish anything about any of these armies. We just had two random armies riding through the countryside that ran into each other and they just fought, and then we'll figure it out in the next episode. You gotta get people turning that kind of show off. So it's you have to live with the fact that this is a television product, and you have to build, and you have to build your television product. People aren't just going to show up and go, well, this is good wrestling.
And that the A show needs to have a much smaller cast. Going back to Okada and Monet, once you acquire those two talents, in my formula, they are now the focal point of the sub-main event and main event every week, maybe switching back and forth. Like one week Okada is doing a thing in the sub-main event, or maybe he has a thing in the opening segment and Monet is the main event and vice versa. But yes, like when you're bringing in these people, especially if you want them to draw the ratings that you want them to draw, you've got to, you know, run it through them. And I think it is a problem that Okada can't get close to the main title right now.
Right. That's where I was going to go with that and Monet, because Monet going same for the TBS title right now, same as opposed thing to the big belt. These are two characters that are going for secondary titles, but they are the big stars on your, and Ospreay is being kept way to the side too on a dream match type thing. While Swerve is still hot, but he's cooling down quick. I mean, yeah. I love Swerve, but it's one of those things where this program has not helped him in some ways, because he probably needed to win in that triple threat.
That would have been an interesting choice, but he definitely needed to come out of that triple threat stronger.
Yeah, and instead it looks like he's just, hey, that was a triple threat. We're not even going to count that. I'm now going in. This is the feud we should have been building the whole time. And it's really not clicking with me. And I think Swerve as a babyface is also kind of a problem as well, because he was far more interesting as a bad guy. But you know, we'll see. I mean,
and then the Undisputed Kingdom have been reduced down to just like the goon squad for the EVPs.
Yeah, well, no, not even that.
They're not part of the EVP faction, but the way they were deployed on that tournament bracket, they are just the sub bosses that the baby faces need to get to, and it just further solidifies that the Undisputed Kingdom are a lower tier faction.
Yes. It's everything's mixed up narratively, but I think we've dwelled on this long enough. Go ahead with your first point here.
Man, we got a lot of Dynamite done already. So I think I'm not gonna do Dynamite at this point.
Okay, I may go back to it.
I mean, I may go back to it, but
I want to snark on Jericho a little bit, but yeah, go ahead.
I like this opening match between Ricochet and JD McDonagh. Pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah. McDonagh always, I know he's problematic and everything, but the one thing about the new Raw in the post Vince era is a lot of these guys who can work are not being hamstrung by the five moves of Doom era Vince.
Right.
And they're able to do stuff. Like,
they're given credibility.
Thinking about a guy like McDonagh in like the 2014 era that me and Desi reviewed, right? He would have five moves and they would all have corny names that would all be Irish themed. Like,
or the they'd be around his big head or something like that too.
Yeah, like he would do a headbutt. And Michael Cole would always put over the power of the noggin or something like that. And he'd have like the clover breaker and other Irish themed names. And instead he is just part of this faction and he does a wide range of moves. You know, that was the thing I was really noticing in this. And Ricochet's given time to breathe. And I'd never been, even going all the way back to Lucha Underground, never entirely sold on this guy, but this is the way to use him. You got to let him do his moves. You got to let him get his shit in.
Yeah. I adored the Rock Cody beatdown in the rain, the blood. The thing I compared it to was the Horseman beatdown of Dusty in the Techwood Studios parking lot, where they followed him with a camera and caught him in the parking lot and beat the crap out of Dusty. There's a certain edge. And I know that this is probably Cody pitching this stuff, and I'm sure Rock is eating it up, and I'm sure Hunter is eating up, because Hunter's an old Crockett guy too. The blood made it great. The rain made it great. The thing that's interesting to me right now is everybody, I think they're building up to a match that's never going to happen, because there's a weird thing where Rock has kind of taken over the Roman storyline here. And I think that the crux of this has to be Roman looking at Rock and going, "You're calling yourself the final boss? I'm the boss. I need to put you in your place." And I think it eventually turned into like a Rock versus Roman story after WrestleMania versus a Rock going after Cody story. It's intriguing in a way, but it's also at the same time, but man, that beatdown, that's what I want in professional wrestling. It was important. It was vicious. It was, you know, it was a little Rock talky a little bit. He was talking throughout the whole thing, but you know, it felt like the wrestling of my youth, where it's like all these bad people are in there for a television taping. Something bad needs to happen to somebody, and you don't want to do that every week, but a nice bloody angle to build to your biggest show is money to me. And I wish there would be more care in the other company, which seemed to just do blood willy-nilly, especially when Moxley's around. You know, make it count. Make these things count. Make the vicious beatdowns count. And then you can have television after that, you know, gives some resonance and builds your big matches. But it just feels like we do things just to do things in the other company at times. Not that WWE's perfect in any way.
No, but this was such a strong close.
It was great.
I mean, it's a no contest. What was a stronger close to the show? Swerve versus Takeshita? Or this? No, this is pretty sweet. You know what I thought was surprising and made sense and was good was Bronson Reed beating Sami Zayn.
Yes.
I thought that it would have been a classic blunder that was a survivable one to beat Bronson Reed on the way to, and Bronson Reed's been, you know, strong.
And Vince would have done that. Vince would have had Reed lose to Sami on the way, because we don't want to make him weak. This gives you a little bit of doubt, and I like Sami and Gunther as a match. I'm not sold on Sami being the one to dethrone Gunther, though.
I'm not either, but then you introduce Chad Gable doing the Apollo Creed Rocky thing.
Yes.
With Sami Zayn talking about being focused. And that made a nice wraparound for this match. And I think in a broader sense, when I'm thinking about universe building, it's important to establish, you know, with the power differential of these big guys, that, you know, if a little guy's not focused, he can absolutely just get waylaid by a guy like Bronson Reed. Bronson Reed comes in, you know, does like a Vader quarter splash on you, and you're out because he's huge.
Yeah.
And the only way Sami Zayn is going to beat a guy like Gunther is by being extremely focused. I actually hope that we get a rematch against Bronson Reed next week where Sami has to focus up on Bronson Reed and he beats Bronson Reed by staying focused.
Punk and Drew are absolutely eating Seth Rollins' lunch. And I kind of love it, because Seth is out there trying to do his character stuff, and Drew even online is like invoking his wife in this thing. I loved that promo segment. I loved kind of the nobody's waiting for the other guy to finish to start talking type of thing. The naturalism of that. I really liked it. Look, we've praised Drew McIntyre every week since this program started, but Drew just being the ultimate stir of crap in this entire company, where he's just like,
oh, and Punk for his part was very, very good this week.
Oh, and Punk was great too.
He was unbelievable. Once we got into the Vince stuff, I mean, just opening that in, that was classic Punk energy.
Yeah, and it felt like he's towing that line of dangerous, even though it was probably approved by management. That's the thing that live TV has missed, and it's why I love Punk so much.
Well, and it was very natural. What was good about it was that it was natural in both the kayfabe and meta sense. Drew McIntyre was invoking that he was dubbed the Chosen One 10 years ago.
Yes.
And going back to this whole 10 years ago, like, running theme through the show here. And Punk's like, No, I'm not going to let you off that easily with that line. Like, who is the one who called you the chosen one 10 years ago? It wasn't just anybody.
Something of moral I forgot what the phrasing was.
Bastion of
morality or whatever.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, Vince is somewhere throwing a dog through a television watching.
And at the same time, it's actually amazing heel characterization that Drew McIntyre is so like amoral at this point that he doesn't matter that like a shit person called him the chosen one. The only thing he's listening to is the part where he got called the chosen one.
Yes. Your turn, sir.
That was good. New Day really just feels like they're here at this point. I feel bad for those guys.
There's a lot of those kind of groups within this, although I think they're going to bring it for that six tag team ladder match. I mean, they're there, but at the same time, it's like, you know, the Street Profits feel kind of there, and you'd think they'd be doing something big in this ladder match, but they're not going to be in it. You know, you'd think Legado del Fantasma would be in it. I don't think are they in it or are they not?
I don't think.
No, they are because they beat the Garzas.
That's right. Yeah. So then I guess now we can move over to
Awesome Truth.
that R-Truth segment where he's like, I'm just on commentary and Miz starts getting the crap kicked out of him. Like, I feel like Cole and commentary should have kicked him out of the booth. Like, maybe that should have been the punchline, but just leaving R-Truth there, like, to sort of like gawk as it all goes down, I thought made him look, I mean, he's never, you know, presented as the brightest character, but like, I just thought it made him look implausibly stupid.
It's weird because it toes the line of making everybody laugh, but also undermining the program because, like, I love when McAfee just decides to turn on Cole and join Miz and Truth and burying Michael Cole when he says something. It's like, yeah, that's poop. Because McAfee is such the joy of Pat McAfee is he's a absolute wild card who will not listen to production at all and just be a child when he wants to say something and start trouble. But at the same time, it's like you have R-Truth who really never... There's never been that moment where you feared for R-Truth's safety after to get the emotional resonance to then bring back. And maybe he's kind of no longer happy-go-lucky after getting beat up and being in this match. It's just all pure Saturday morning cartoon. You know, oh, DIY is Regeneration X, you know, that kind of thing. And you're just like... You want the beat of reality in there to ground R-Truth, and you never get that like you did. Like, we were kind of comparing him to Jimmy Boogie Woogie Man Valiant, who was a comedy character, but when he got beat up, and he got angry about it. R-Truth just seems to go, oh, I'm still part of the Judgment Day.
No, he's like a cartoon character in the sense that there's no long-term memory formation.
Yes.
Yeah, every day is the same day. I'm going to change gears here to NXT.
Okay.
Lola Vice should have annihilated whoever came out to the ring. It was
amazing.
It was absolutely ridiculous that she came out and, you know, she's been, you know, pushed down and pushed down at this point. And she's basically saying, I am tough. I'm going to fight whoever comes out here. It's actually kind of a babyface thing, and it's a very natural sort of babyface turning point. She's now on her own. Out comes Natty, and Lola should have beaten Natty. There is no reason Natty should win anything.
This is Impact. This is Impact thinking. Natty makes her one trip to NXT a year to work with the young kids to have the good match because she had that one good match with Charlotte, you know, and took her through the paces, so we now trust her to come work with the young people. But there is no value in Natty beating your developmental people. None. Zero. None. Nada.
Nada.
And why do we need to keep Natty strong? She never wins anything. And no offense, they push her once a year, and we start to see stuff, and then we just decide, no, we're not going to do that, because, and then, you know, then she starts making cat puns or whatever.
And now we're way past the point where we would even remotely entertain doing stuff like that with her.
On the other hand, in losing, I'm going to counteract with this. Dakota Kai is a great ragdoll. I watched SmackDown last night, and I had watched SmackDown last week. And look, she's not supposed to have the heft of an Io or an Asuka or a Kairi, and that's fine. She went up real easy for Jade last night. She is an unheralded MVP of a women's roster when she's healthy, because she does sly character work as either a babyface or a heel. She's not going to be the most overpowering presence when you watch her in terms of wrestling flow, but she's solid. And then you can beat her and ragdoll her. She takes bumps that are amazing at times for somebody of her frame. She will die for you to get you over. And that segment with Naomi and Bianca and Jade, the match was okay. I wouldn't say it was great, but her going after Jade like that and just getting killed on the powerbomb. Dakota Kai, always a welcome presence. She's a nuts and bolts person. I think you need good nuts and bolts people, and you still need to give them credibility at times. I just wouldn't do the natty plan and go up and have her beat somebody from developmental you see something in. But yeah, I wanted to give a shout out to her.
Next from NXT, Ilya Dragunov and Channing Stacks Lorenzo. This is another match where the energy was just way off. This grudging respect thing at the end, because we don't want to commit to turning the family heel. I am sorry. We have gone. You threw the man in a trunk and you made him think about things in an existential way by himself on a bridge. One of the worst things that can be done to a person. And at this point, the family are obviously heels.
Yeah, we've gotten too much into lore of the character on these NXT things in terms of, they're a good guy mafia now. Okay, great.
But they're good guys, but they're also the mafia.
They're also the mafia.
Yeah, and like two spoonfuls of each. They do mafia stuff, but then they also got hearts of gold while they're doing the crimes. And I find it baffling. Like, Lorenzo's job here should have been to be targeting a limb, and commentary should have been saying stuff like, it looks like Lorenzo's not even trying to win the match, he's just going after Dragunov's knee, or he's just going after Dragunov's elbow because his finishing move's an elbow. But Lorenzo should have been out there with extremely targeted offense, and commentary should have been mentioning how Lorenzo was deviating from his normal offense, and it seems that he's doing so specifically to do what the boss needs, that like maybe he's not trying to win the match, maybe victory is something else for Lorenzo. And also Rizzo, I'm sorry, the whole point of this match being set up was that Dragunov's supposed to be hurt, and she should be doing something in service of that. What the hell does she do in this mafia?
She's the she's not the consigliere.
No, she's nothing now.
Yeah. You thought she'd be the heavy hitter, but...
Yeah, she should absolutely be helping Lorenzo in an active way. He's the underboss. She's constantly helping him in his matches, giving him the edge or whatever, but they don't want to go into them being heels like that. But they are also the mafia. They also throw people in their trunks.
I'm going to let you have Trick and Mello the video package, and give it the effusive praise the praise it needs. I'm going to go over to AEW again. This Jericho and Hook segment was terrible. And I don't understand it. I don't understand why we're doing this. I was watching Collision, and Jericho's calling out Hook on Wednesday again after losing to him. Given the charges against him originally, I don't think, hey, you can come by and get advice from me at any time. Would that be in your room, Chris, perhaps? I just watched this. I went, my God, they're going to go hard into this because he's been cleared. If this is all just to get Jericho to turn heel on Hook, can we get the 2 months off of Chris Jericho, please? Can we just have some time away from Chris Jericho needing his star heft and having people sing Judas and all this other stuff? I don't see it. Hook already beat you. Are you going to get your win back? Are you going to get your heat back? Is he going to murder death you? Probably not. This program stinks. And I know Hook doesn't have the stroke to cancel it, but it reeks of Natty and Lola Vice to me. It's, oh, the veterans got, just be in the ring for me for a while and then you'll get over. That doesn't happen unless you kill the guy. And that, I don't think that works anymore because we have so many name versus name matches on a week to week basis that a simple upset of a young guy over a veteran.
Oh no,
that never followed up on.
It can't be an upset. It has to be an overwhelm that like the veteran comes out and gets absolutely sort of surprised.
It has to be Bill and Starks versus FTR, which was the best thing they ever did in AEW to establish a team. And unfortunately now that it looks like Starks got injured, there's not going to be that rematch. Yeah, when they came out, they murdered death FTR, and you're just like, whoa, what the hell was that? And that got people thought, and then they never really followed up on it to any degree because we have other stories to tell right now, apparently, or whatever, and we can't. It's never the victory. It's the follow-up. And if you don't follow it up, you're not going to make a guy Action Andretti after that. You know, yeah, he got a great pin over Chris Jericho. Now he's, like, accompanying Top Flight to ringside or whatever. It's never the match itself. It's what you do after the match to position them and the build and all those other things. And this is what they still haven't learned over there.
But a guy like Hook should be Taz missioning Chris Jericho and putting him out in 2.5 minutes. Jericho goes for the Judas effect early and he ends up getting caught. It's a short match and he taps him out.
Fine with that, but they are so scared of the Goldberg build. They're scared of Goldberg. They're scared of the criticism.
But to continue here, someone like Lola Vice should be throwing one of her martial arts kicks to Natty's head and knocking out Matt Natty, and the ref just stops the match. Like these are the types of things that actually do something for a younger talent.
The Aleister Black treatment in NXT, where he would just give the blackout kick and pin a guy 1, 2, 3, or the ref would stop it or whatever. Yeah.
That also would have been a nice turn on the convention, too, because we're so conditioned to, here comes the veteran who's going to teach the young person a lesson or whatever, or give them, you know, a challenge, and then the young person just knocks him out. You're like, nah. Yeah, that would actually be a refreshing change of pace.
I'd love that.
And it wouldn't affect Natty at all, because she's in the women's battle royal stage of her career.
Your turn, sir.
Okay. I thought there were not one but two good talking segments on NXT this week, so I'm going to talk about them both.
Okay.
I think the Ridge Holland segment was actually quite well executed. I know some people find the Ridge Holland stuff to be in bad taste, but, you know, I don't know. I think sometimes we like our realism in wrestling and we like our like real world storylines being worked in. And sometimes we don't. And it seems to be very all over the place. I mean, I grew up with Owen Hart breaking Steve Austin's neck being a storyline for a minute.
Yeah.
So, to me, it is all, it's just part of the business. And I also think there's an interesting possibility here where, like, Ridge Holland ends up getting that, like, motivational speech from Big E at some point to come back to wrestling.
I was hoping that. I mean,
that kind of feels like where we're going here.
it feels like they should have had Big E come in as soon as they saw that people were booing Ridge Holland. Because the casting here, they wanted to cast Ridge Holland as a babyface, and the crowd wasn't having it, and the I Got Kids thing wasn't enough.
And well, the guilt thing was... And part of that is also the perplexing finish to the Sean Spears match, where it was very clear that he was going to break and injure Sean Spears, but not for the intercession of others.
Yeah, they should have had the Big E reconciliation moment earlier, to me. I mean, we may get that now, and you can build that up, I guess, but it's like, once you see that it's not working because people are still mad at him, you got to book that segment. You got to book Big E coming out and going, look, there's injuries that happen in this business all the time. I forgive you, brother, whatever. Or
I mean, Mark Henry. putting Ridge Holland up against Sean Spears, to me, was the original sin in this chain of events. Because Sean Spears' return was not viewed as some menacing heel making his return who we all hated. People were like, oh, it's the 10 guy.
Right.
I'm excited about the 10 guy. 10. And Ridge Holland just has like that cool theme song, but like has nothing else about him at this point.
Yeah, we do that. Then we cast him as a heel. Then we put him up against Dijak. It's just like, okay.
Which, not for nothing, that happened before the Ridge Holland segment later on in the show. So I think that confuses the audience even more.
Yeah.
When the presentation of Spears colors the presentation of Holland. So we're hot off of cheering for Spears against Dijak because, like, he's older. He's a little bit older, and he's obviously smaller than Dijak. And, you know, Dijak has been presented, you know, with more authority.
We just need to get rid of that mohawk on Sean Spears. That's the thing that kills me about him. It's like he's a smaller guy with a mohawk. It was the same problem with Ciampa when he first came in.
I liked the taxi driver mohawk on Ciampa.
Okay. The other talking segment?
The Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams.
This
segment
was fantastic.
Oh, this was so good. That old football pro that they had talking about revenge and how he loves revenge or whatever.
Yeah.
I just thought that stuff, man, I don't know if they scripted that stuff for that guy or that guy was just freewheeling, but that was some high level, like, NPC dialogue in one of these promos.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember who it was because
it really made the segment.
I thought
Carmelo and Trick for both of their parts were great. I thought there were a lot of other things going on there that were great, but that guy in particular, I just thought really set off the entire segment and just, you know, took that segment from good to great.
Get it up. Keep vamping a bit.
I think this is an interesting place to take this feud. I think they were stronger together. I think it was more fun loving them than hating them. And Carmelo with the SWAT team still feels a little bit goofy. Like the SWAT guys make him seem like a joke somehow. They don't make him seem menacing. They make him seem like a wimp.
I love these hype videos though, that they're doing, and they're asking different people, you know, their opinions of Trick and Mello. And so I agree though with Brian Alvarez, this thing needs to be for the title, and they missed that window because they kept it on Ilya. And I just, I've not seen the football player. I forgot. They're just not doing the,
I mean, thing. I think it being not being for a title certainly hurts. I think it would have been better if Carmelo had stabbed Trick in the back for the title shot, right?
Yeah.
And now that they're not fighting for anything other than, like, I mean, the thing
pride?
That really hurts, the pride, and the thing that really hurts this feud is that Carmelo is coming into this hot off of getting his ass kicked by Ilya.
Yeah,
so,
not only that, but getting his ass kicked over on SmackDown, too. You remember we had the right before the Royal Rumble, Carmelo was getting beat like every week by somebody on SmackDown. Trick came out to it's like, and Trick got the big pop, and you're just like, Carmelo hasn't been kept strong anywhere, and I don't even know if they can bring him up to the main roster full time after this without building him back up again.
And having him get beaten by Ilya really begs the obvious question of, what is the point of this match for Carmelo then after he beats Trick Williams and secures his pride?
Yeah, that's going to be very, very odd. I'm going to make a prediction here.
What you got?
And it's NXT related. I think Obafemi wins that Andre the Giant Battle Royal.
I think so. They like their Obafemi.
They like their Obafemi a lot. And it's not any of the guys that they've announced so far. So there's probably going to be a surprise. Braun Strowman may come back. I don't know. I could see that happening too. They love their Obafemi, and this match, this triple threat, it's going to be interesting. It's a hoss fight. It's a meat match. I love me some Josh Briggs. And Dijak solid. So that's going to be an interesting match next Saturday, but I don't have anything else for my lazy river right now.
I don't have anything else either. I think we got it all.
Yeah, we've exhausted it, but next week, big previews for Stand and Deliver and WrestleMania. Going to be a big weekend for the Fed, as people hate when I call it that, so I'm calling it that. But this has been Shake Them Ropes. You can follow me on Twitter at CrapGame13. You can't follow Chris on Twitter. You can follow him on Instagram at Dr. Nov, DOCTOR_NOV. You can just follow the show as it goes along at Shake Them Ropes. I update that as episodes come out. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Big week for us here, too. All sorts of previews by the mothership with Joe and Rich and on their Patreon over there. You can check them out for more about that. And the other tertiary shows might be covering some stuff as well. So, check us out. I also do a show over on Fight Game Media. It's the Dynamite Show. It's all about Dynamite and AEW. About 20 minutes after we go off the air, or they go off the air, we go on the air on YouTube Live, and it drops in your podcatchers over on Fight Game Media. Appreciate you if you give it a listen. Chris has other interests, and he has a new place, too.
Yeah. I'm teaching music lessons. I am working up at the mound. If you want to get lessons from me online, DOCTOR_NOV on Instagram is the place to message me. I also do them out of my house here. I have the full drums and bass and guitar set up and all that jazz here. As I mentioned, I'm back at the mountain. So if you want to see me and experience me as your tour guide, you might be able to come out to Albuquerque and do that. And there'll be some opportunities to see me play music potentially in the future here. We will talk about that at some point.
And now I will be lectured by Chris for that comment I made about his heritage.
It was an ism.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.